The following podcast contains language that is not suitable for everybody.
Fucking A.
Fucking A.
I love all of you so much.
How are you too, buddy? Is everything going okay? You feeling, you're just on the other side of a
look,
big
like,
comic book
I
day?
Woke up this morning and I took a walk around my yard because I do that now. Because I have a yard in which I can do that.
Well, now that you're old, you're in your twilight
years. It's just like a nice way to, I make a cup of coffee, I take my coffee mug, and I walk around my yard and just like see what has appeared that has not been there the day before.
Like plant-wise.
Yeah.
Bug-wise.
Yeah.
I see.
And, my lilac trees are blooming, and I think I have a crab apple that I thought was dead in the back right corner.
I like to call crab apples crab apples.
Crab apples. I have a crab apple tree, I think. Mm-hmm. And there was just, it was almost picturesque because I walked up, this tree just exploded with birds, and they all like flew away. It was just a really
nice way to wake up.
Yeah,
that's a nice alliteration, exploded with birds, because that's exactly when you walk by, that's what happens. It's like, boom, wah, la, la, la.
Yeah, it was just really nice. And my maple, I have this giant maple tree.
All right, let's move on.
Oh, come on.
Welcome to Super Skull. Welcome to Super Skull.
Don't use your sultry voice right away.
Welcome to Super Skull, Vault of Midnight's new weekly Comic Day audio digest. My name is Nick Wybar. I work at Vault of Midnight. I'm here with Marcus Schwimmer.
Hello.
And Curtis Sullivan.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, the both of you. It is a pleasure, as always.
It most certainly is.
Your
pleasure.
How is your morning finding both of you? Can I tell you about my walk into the podcast this morning?
Yeah.
Oh, do it.
I was I did not have a lighter, as is my wont.
Oh,
and I wanted
shit.
To smoke a cigarette, as is also my wont.
Did you fling yourself into traffic or think about it? Or
every single time.
Okay.
And I asked this dude on the street. I'm very, very good at when I need a lighter, I'm very good. I turn into the predator, basically. And I can find anyone with a lighter, even if they don't have it out on their person or if they're not smoking a cigarette, I can instantly fucking, in that moment, I know if you have a lighter or not.
I can see you triangulating your heat vision, your lighter vision.
Absolutely. And there's this one dude, he was standing outside of the vape, the e-juice bar.
Yeah.
Nice.
My favorite e-juice, my second favorite e-juice bar
Thank
in
you.
Ann Arbor, Michigan.
It's hard to pick.
And I asked him if I could trouble him for a lighter. And I always do this. I always have my cigarette out because I don't want people to think I'm accosting them for cigarettes, which is what everybody assumes that you're doing.
Right.
Right.
And he said, yep. And he pulled out a lighter, and it was on a little zip line attached to his belt.
Right.
You have to get one.
So I touched it, and then I let go of it on accident, and it smashed into his leg.
Oh, boy.
Because the thing was like too taut. He didn't calibrate his fucking bungee or whatever. And then we both just stood there looking at each other. I said, what do you think? Can we try again? And he gave it to me again, and I had to light my cigarette with a tether attached to this person's crotch and belt.
Wow.
As I lit my cigarette. Have you guys ever seen one of these things before, and do you know where I can get one?
I've seen one for keys, but never for a lighter. I'm sure the e-juice vape bar has one.
Oh, right.
Of course.
They must.
They've got all the little doodads.
Wait, why would you have a lighter for your a cig?
Because the e-cig is only part of the business.
Uh-huh.
The bong along also, I think, is incorporated into many
But
of
do you
these.
Just e-bong at that point?
I don't know if you can e-bong. I don't know if that's a thing. I'll let you know when
I have to do so much more research.
I'll let you know when I open my Magic Singles Pop Vinyl E-Juice Bar Sorcerer's Emporium.
Yeah, I think because if there is e-bongs, there's money there.
E-bongs! Oh, that's wonderful.
Is there like an Apple version? It's like i-bong. It just comes in like
be.
A very sleek aluminum...
Smart
it's
bongs.
Not compatible
Smart
with
bongs.
Any other bongs.
Yeah, nope.
Works on its own OS.
how was your guys' morning?
I had a great morning. I moved into a new place. I'm living in this small little farmhouse.
You're off the grid now,
I'm
right?
Off the grid.
Did you move into a small house?
I did. Well,
a tiny house?
Pretty, it was a one-room schoolhouse that has now been converted into a home.
Mm-hmm. That is so Marcus.
Yeah, and I took a walk around my yard this morning. It was really nice because I have enough of a yard that I can do that. So I just took, like Bilbo Baggins, I walked the yard.
You mow that lawn yet?
I did. Yep. Actually, it's super embarrassing. I told my mom I was going to mow it on Friday. I live pretty close to my parents now, right down the road. And she was like, oh, cool. I was like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, I don't have to work till later. My mom went down yesterday and mowed my lawn for me, which was just the nicest thing.
Your mom mowed your lawn
for
you?
She's a sweetheart.
That is wonderful of her.
Yeah.
But that's emasculating for you as a man.
You know, it is. But at the same time, like, I don't have to mow my lawn on Friday. I can do some other stuff. That's pretty
cool.
Your
mom mowed your lawn
for
you. Yeah,
she's sweet. She's a sweet woman.
That's the thing about moms. You don't really realize until later, much later in life, that they're crazy busy, but they somehow do all the shit.
Yeah.
And then they do all their stuff and then come over to your house and mow your lawn.
It was just the nicest thing.
Moms are crazy.
I specifically told her not to do it, but Audrey doesn't give a fuck. She's just going to do it anyways.
I'm going to mow your lawn.
Damn it, Audrey.
It was awesome. She's a machine. It's
outstanding.
Great.
Hope. Lovely. My phone just buzzed like it's my first podcast.
Curtis, what'd you do this morning?
I had a city breakfast of black coffee.
Yeah.
And concrete. And I read just a stack of comics. I farted around on the internet. I sat in a little cafe all alone in the dark. It was wonderful.
That sounds nice.
Yep.
Real quick, Rachel Polk found a lighter leash for me. They're called lighter leashes. They cost $5.
Oh. Lovely.
Yeah. Cool.
I say to you, though, that maybe the whole rest of the world should get these.
And then
not Nick.
Thank you. Thank you. That's what I was thinking, and I didn't want to say it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Curtis.
The population of Earth needs a lighter leash.
And my final question before we dig into comic books, which is ostensibly what we're doing here. It's a new Comic Day audio digest from Vault of Midnight Comic Books and
allegedly.
Stuff.
Allegedly.
Is, can I mow your lawn sometime, Curtis?
Fucking please. It's brutal right now.
Because I miss mowing lawns. Something fierce.
I need
over.
It bad. Today? It's
today?
Rough. Like, I woke up this morning, I literally looked out my window because my window was wide open. I was like, holy shit, my yard is a disaster.
Yeah?
So, what are you doing?
I'm just
in
saying, like, it does
three
not,
hours?
To me, it does not sound like an awesome, a terrible idea to maybe mow your lawn and then play Uncharted. That sounds like a pretty cool day.
I think
Curtis.
That's tonight. I'll make dinner while you're mowing the lawn.
Uh-huh.
Dinner will be ready for you when you come in from the mowing the lawn.
I'm just, let's just kick this around a little bit more because it's
right.
It's not the worst idea I've ever
there
had.
There we go. Okay.
In the news.
Such an active news reporting machine.
Oh my goodness,
it's a lot of Morse code.
Yeah, it's so much Morse code.
I thought one of you was going to stop me, and neither one of you did.
It was like a ticker tape parade out of your mouth.
Captain America Civil War came out, and I don't have anything of like newsworthiness. I don't know shit about the numbers. I don't know how it sold. I don't care.
It killed fifth biggest opening ever.
I don't care. Like I said, I don't care.
Yeah, fair enough.
I just want to talk about how much I like that movie.
It's a very good movie.
Dang it. You know how there's like people who are like, superhero movies soon will like go away and blah, blah this, and they're getting blah, blah.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Well, okay.
I'm going to say
that this was a good movie, and I really enjoyed this movie.
I think it puts a lot of juice back into why we can, there's more room as long as you keep it fresh and keep adding stuff and mixing up the formula.
Yeah.
You know, I think Deadpool was a cool example a couple months ago of, hey, it's different, it's not for everybody, it's naughty and all this. This movie, I think, did some stuff I hadn't seen in a Marvel movie before.
Yeah.
And I freaking loved it.
What did it do that you hadn't seen in a Marvel movie before without spoiling anything? Can you do that?
Yeah, it just wasn't, I don't want to, you know, it wasn't end of the world. You know what I mean?
Everything wasn't a catastrophe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big conflict of the movie was not about knocking down as many buildings as possible, and it wasn't about destroying a continent.
Yep. Or the end of all time
and
space.
It was about super dudes punching each other 1,000 times.
Yes.
Which is cool, though. Like, that's fine as long as it's in this context of, like, if we fail, the world ends. You know, we've done that already. This was very small scale.
It wasn't doing that.
That's correct. Yeah. Man, and I really thought that what this movie did so well was it gave all of the actors and actresses who are in this film a little moment to shine, their own little moment. Even for like Hawkeye, who's not in the film a ton, he just had these little moments where you could really see the depth of his character, and they allowed everyone to have those moments.
Can I say this too?
Yeah.
Jeremy Renner?
Yeah.
Still smoking hot, got it.
He acts circles around a lot of the seasoned actors in that movie.
Jeremy Renner is the shit.
He's acting like he has a couple really intense moments in the film, and you just look at him, you're like, that motherfucker can act.
Yeah, it was
so spot on.
I don't think we're ever going to get a Hawkeye movie, but God damn it, do I want one.
I know, yeah. It'd be sweet.
Yep, no, that's true. I thought new Spider-Man was like, holy shit. I think we can all agree on that. How soon can we get a Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland?
That's like, probably going to happen, right?
Yeah. Can that be like next week, please?
Yeah, he was a funny dude, funny kid.
Yeah, they are doing it. It's called Homecoming, so Tom Holland will be having his own cool. Spider-Man flick, but not soon enough
Marissa
for my taste.
As Aunt May? That, is that a spoiler? It's inspired.
Yeah, you love it?
Killer,
I love Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, it was very good.
I like the modern New York about it, you know? Just they were in the apartment. It was just different. Aunt May's an aunt. She's not a grandma.
Yeah.
It was dope.
Yeah.
So
for me, though, like Black Panther, T'Challa, he steals the whole movie. Every moment that dude had, I was just like glued to the screen. He nails it in every way. He stole the whole show.
Every time I see an Avengers movie or a Captain America movie and I see Chris Evans as Captain America, I want to be a better dude.
Yep.
That does more push-ups.
Yep.
And I can't escape it. Every single time I walk out of that theater, I'm like, it was a good movie. I got to get every part of my life together.
There's a really good buddy bro moment in that movie between Winter Soldier, Falcon, and Cap. And it involves a very small car. But either way, it's just like, what this movie did so well is it like gave the idea that these characters in between films had like hung out and got to know each other better and things had happened. Nothing. Nothing catastrophic, nothing huge, no invasion, but like they had gone on missions, they got to know each other, they developed friendships and relationships, and this movie just really nailed that without beating it over the head of everyone watching it. It was great.
So what I'll also say, like, there were moments in this movie I was just like, you know, because I'm a bit of a hater, I'm a bit of a cynic, I'll own that. That's fine.
No.
And there are moments when I was like, when they're getting ready to do the big superhero fight, where I was like, all right, bring on the shitty. Bring on the stupid.
It wasn't though.
It was really, really good. And it's a tough high wire act to play. It's literally, it was eight people in silly costumes.
Yes.
Literally running towards each other to punch each other.
Yeah.
Like that should be stupid.
It's awesome.
It was not stupid. It really worked really well.
Dialogue was killer.
And the other thing is that I saw this movie with my brother.
Yeah.
Who's seen just like a handful of Marvel movies, and he really, really liked it. He also had no idea who half of those people were.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't even think about that.
Was it still okay for him, though?
He said he liked it. He said it was fun, but a lot of the subtext and the context was completely lost because he had no idea who, you know, Scarlet Witch was, for instance. And I didn't realize at this point how... It made me think about how many fucking movies have come out in this universe and how many characters have been introduced, and they didn't even have all of them in this movie. We had no Thor, no Hulk in this whole movie.
Yeah.
I saw it with my lady friend who her comic knowledge is based on her being forced to listen to this podcast.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Hey, girl. That was for me. That wasn't Marcus. Hey, girl, from Nick.
And anytime there was anything to do with Wakanda, she was just like she's so into it. She wants to know everything about Wakanda. And that's just the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And I'm right there with her. Like, the little glimpses we get of Wakandan culture and Wakandan life, so well done.
I'm crazy down. And I thought the fourth act of this film... Is that what they call it?
The fourth act?
Third act with the end of the movie.
The end of the movie before the credits?
Before the credits. Just the last chunk. You know, you kind of got your story beats.
Third act.
Thank you. I thought they go a different place.
They totally did.
Super dope.
Brought it way home. This is probably vague and not super helpful or entertaining to you, the listener, but go see that movie.
Just be prepared to love it.
Good
all.
Movie.
That's all I got.
Nick, can we talk about some comic books that came out this week?
I insist that we do. In a giant superhero battle, only a few are left standing, the ones that the publishers deem financially viable. And if you can think of these comics as the ones that we deem mentally and spiritually viable. These
really
are the
nice.
Last comics standing after a civil war. I don't know.
It's
really
all
nice.
Dollars and cents, really, is what we're getting
no,
at.
No, I'm saying I'm using the money as a metaphor for just the comics being good.
I see.
And... Curtis, what was your pick?
I go first. I'm going to pick a comic book called Island. Not The Island, just Island.
It is just Island, isn't it? Island.
Yep.
I've been saying it wrong.
Well, now you can say it right. From now on, now you know.
Thank you.
This book is an anthology, which means in comic talk...
It's all about the study of insects.
Correct. Anthropathology.
It's about a comic... It's a comic book shaped like a human being.
Correct.
What is it actually?
It's a map of the human mind. This is issue number 7 of Island, an anthology from Image Comics. An anthology is a collection of short stories. This particular one has been quite good in its run.
Who manages this beast?
The folks who edit and curate this bad boy are Brandon Graham.
Yes.
Who's done a bunch of awesome comics. Just
Multiple Warheads.
Yes. King City.
Yes. Prophet.
So many more. Prophet. He's the shit. And also Emma Rios, artist and writer extraordinaire. You might know her from a book called Pretty Deadly, which is quite good. And she's got her own stuff. She's got a book called Id coming out soon, which was pulled from the pages of Island and will soon be a graphic novel. This has a lot of good stuff. This is a fat old comic. This is an $8 comic, but it's like 100 pages.
It looks big.
It took me 2 hours to read this comic.
It looks like you could prop up a wobbly table with it.
You absolutely could. Like forever. You just put it there and leave it forever. Yeah. It's now
It'd be a shame,
structure.
But you could.
This is also my cover of the week, you guys, by the way. Malachi Ward did this cover, and it's holy shit good. Think of like a colossal sort of a space titan humanoid thing. Think the engineer from Prometheus, just a big, hairless humanoid. But this one, its body is made up of tons of other humans.
Oh, God.
Weaved into its skin.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's cosmic as hell and totally intense.
Oh, I'm looking at it, making me feel weird.
It's a great cover.
It's a really good cover.
We'll just go over some of the big beats of this. It opens up with a alien travel ad by this lady named Kim Kirsch. It's got a whole fake alphabet, so it's all in this alien language. You can't read it, but the visuals are great, and it's sort of like a, come check out beautiful Aqua 9 planet for your vacation.
As an advertisement for to travel there.
Yes.
Cool.
A fictional space planet.
And you don't need to know what they're saying.
You don't even need to know. It's visually just stunning. The first story, it's a big long one. It's like two comics worth of a comic. It's called Firebug. Mm-hmm. It's by this dude named Johnny Christmas, who writes and draws this thing. It is crazy good. It's about a fire goddess and the cult that worships her. And these old gods are kind of falling by the wayside as civilization develops, and these young kind of brash revolutionaries want to free this goddess. But they don't know what the hell they're getting into. And there's death, and there's scary, and there's cops,
yeah,
and there's love.
Yeah. What else?
That was about it.
Oh.
It was just, for me, it was interesting. It was like, you know, what if that Occupy Wall Street movement found a large, giant, powerful thing?
And a volcano god.
And what does that mean?
What?
Well, so like, because, you know, Occupy Wall Street, like they had their, what they were going for, but it never really was one message. It was never really one continuous thing. And so like, what if those people found a giant volcano that they could essentially erupt at will and kill a ton of people? So there's a lot of really good dialogue in this story. A lot of what if, a lot of I think you think. It was really great. I dug it.
Yeah, and the fun part for me in this one was, so it's a bunch of young kids who got a bunch of great ideas.
Yep.
And they're, you know, fighting the man and all this. And all of a sudden they realize this thing is, like, real. Mm-hmm. And there's an actual god. And they're way over their heads.
And did they seek out to find a god?
They do.
They were looking for some kind of power, and
correct,
then they somehow found one?
Yes, and they realize they're embroiled in a thing that's much larger than they had any idea.
Yeah, this is like what Grant Morrison must feel like every day.
Every day.
Yeah. By the way. That sounds really cool.
It was a blast. The art's super good. You don't need to know squat. You
it's
can just jump right in.
Too.
It's just like a 60-page comic. Also in this issue is a story called Ancestor. It's by Matt Sheenan and Malachi Ward. And this is about a guy who develops the new perfect human. And this new perfect human is so evolved that it decides that it's going to evolve all humanity. So it's like this, what if, you know, Apple founder Steve Jobs created a new life form, and then that life form decided it was going to evolve humanity, whether it wanted it or not. I thought it was killer.
It was
the visuals are just bananas good. It's crazy colorful and weird. It was great. So this is just a big old fat anthology. You guys should check it out. Doesn't matter that's issue 7. Don't be scared of issue 7. Grab any issue of the Island. I haven't read them all, but I've read a good huge chunk of them, and they're all great. So give the Island a shot. This issue is a perfect spot to jump in. I know we talk on this podcast a lot about anthologies, and we're like, well, anthologies are a real mixed bag because you have a lot of creators,
yep,
a lot of different voices. You're not going to like everything. This book is consistently killer, and I think for $8, it's a hard sell. Like an anthology, they're usually bigger and more expensive, so you're taking a little more of a risk.
It seems like they don't care about page count for this. They put out as many pages as they need to for each issue. I feel like everyone's been different.
Yep.
In terms of girth.
I think you're right about that. And I love that.
Which I like.
No, and this is, you can tell, this is the folks who are running the show at Island, said Brandon Graham and Emma Rios.
Mm-hmm.
They're reading all this stuff. They're curating the shit out of this book.
That's true.
And they're incredibly talented folks who, issue after issue, appear to have a really good eye and know what they're doing. So that is my huge pick of the week.
Island.
The Island.
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 Yeah.
No, the. And I had some notes that I was going to tell you about some other shit.
Oh, please. Let me just go ahead and, yes, of course. But please. Those are your notes.
Where are we at?
Other stuff right did
here.
Read?
Okay, thank you. Here we go. I'm going to clap. Some other stuff that I did read that I dug quite a bit. Black Panther number 2 is out this week, you dudes. It was great. We all liked issue number 1. Issue number 2 cemented the fact that, holy shit, I want more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm rereading Civil War right now because I watched that one Captain America movie that's called like Civil War also.
Yeah.
And I'm finding that I'm digging that 2 issues in. We'll see how I feel when I get to the end. And I won't spoil it, but I did like Heavy Metal 280, and we'll talk more about that going forward.
Why not? Why not talk about that?
I can't think of a good reason not to.
Cool.
Nick, what was your pick this week?
So my pick this week is Cigarette Girl by Masahiko Matsumoto. These are a bunch of short stories originally published from 1972 to 1974. They are part of the what was called, I didn't know this, but there's the kind of the independent comics movement in Japan. Gekiga. So it's 11 stories. They've been translated to English from, you know, they were originally printed in the 70s, like we were saying. They're all these little short stories, very small. It feels like, in a lot of ways, you know, just more, think Beverly, think small, more independent-minded, kind of closer stories, very character-driven, 5, 6, 10 pages, kind of thing. About young people starting out their lives, right?
Not they're interconnected in any way, just little
not seemingly,
snippets.
Just little vignettes of these people living their lives.
Nice.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was really cool.
Let me ask you this. How much smoking? Is there a lot of cigarettes in it?
You know, I didn't see a ton of cigarettes in there at all.
Okay.
And I didn't make it all the way through it because it was, you know, 260-some pages. But there could be cigarettes to come.
Okay, all right.
I'm not ruling it out.
It's just such a seriously good-looking book. I was struck by the art on the cover of it. Does it kind of keep that tone? Does it vary in art style?
It looks just like that all the way through. Oh, so
it's one creative team doing all these little stories.
It's this one dude, Masahiko Matsumoto,
cool.
Yeah, does the whole thing.
Neat.
It makes me want to find out more about this whole movement that I didn't even know about.
Nice. Yeah, I know very little. I know I really liked...
Holy shit. Ming's here.
So we gotta bring Ming Chen on the microphone just to say what's up?
I feel like we have to.
Do you want it?
Yeah, Ming, get your ass in here, man.
Hello, everybody. Hello,
hey,
gentlemen.
Ming.
What's up, homeslice?
Ming, what are you doing crashing our podcast, dude?
that's all I wanted to do is crash into things and crash into podcasts. But thank you guys for the warm welcome. We had to roll by here. We heard if there's a hot microphone somewhere, I gotta be on it.
You're like a moth to flame, my brother. How you doing, man? What brings you into town?
I'm doing great. I'm here for the Motor City Comic Con 2016.
Of course
you are.
I am.
Are you gonna come visit us at Vault of Midnight Detroit?
I'm gonna roll by today, actually. I literally just landed. That's first thing on the agenda was eat.
Uh-huh.
Second on the agenda was crash a podcast. Third on the list, go to Vault of Midnight Detroit.
Awesome, man.
Outstanding, nice. Man.
Oh. And I will be giving you guys big plugs at the con. I'm going to make sure everybody in Novi at the Suburban Collection show place this weekend knows you guys are open for business and that I highly endorse Vault of Midnight.
Thanks,
all
brother.
Its locations.
Oh, nice. Man. It's good to hear from you. Well, we got you on the mic. It's like, what you give us a hot pick. Give us one sweet comic you've read recently.
I'm enjoying the Marvel's Black Panther. So number 2 is out this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine the fever, the lines out the door for the adventures of T'Challa has reached a fever pitch. And for anybody not familiar with Black Panther or maybe just getting into it, a great jumping in point. Definitely. You'll get some political intrigue and you'll get some ass kicking as well.
Dope.
Yes, political ass kicking.
Political ass intrigue.
I think we could learn. I think our country could learn a lot from Wakanda.
You're not wrong. You're absolutely not wrong.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have any vibranium here, but, you know, I think we have substances that are just as good.
It's really good that we don't have vibranium in the world.
Yeah.
We're all better off.
We're all way better for the fact that we don't. You're right.
If I'm Wakanda, though, I might keep the doors closed. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You know, if I'm...
Fuck off.
I'm just all like, yeah, eat shit.
Yeah,
good luck, everybody.
Closed.
Yeah.
Yeah, now they're harboring fugitives, but, you know, spoiler alert, I don't know, but...
Shit, Ming. He's going to fucking... Just crash the podcast and drop huge spoilers for the biggest superhero movie that just came out?
I didn't say who. I like to make omelets and break eggs.
I thought this guy was a broadcasting professional.
Oh, there's nothing professional about me, I assure you.
Ming Chen, thank you for popping on, man. God damn it. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you for the warm welcome. Yeah, I'll be seeing you guys in all locations. So, yeah, in the Detroit, when visiting the Detroit area, be sure to visit the newly opened Vault of Midnight Comics.
Thank you. Wow.
Yeah, we'll expect a tweet and an Insta.
I'm checking in like 8 times. Oh yeah. Don't worry about that. It's what I do best.
Come visit this weekend. I know you're gonna be busy doing the con stuff, but I don't care. Come by the shop this weekend. Say hi to me, dude.
I'm coming by. Thank you guys.
Thanks, man.
Ming.
I don't know from where to summon the will to go on.
What now?
It's fucking.
He's just lurking.
He's just lurking.
All right, let's go. Here we go. So, cigarette girl, 2 thumbs up. That's what you're saying here.
Don't even try to fucking dismount. Let's just move on to the next thing. What do you think?
So, what you're saying is you wish you had two more hands?
Yeah.
So you could give
good
cigarette
book.
Girl.
Overall, good book.
It was a great book.
4 thumbs up.
Absolutely. And also Black Panther 2. So the picks so far, we got Island, number 7.
Uh-huh.
We got Cigarette Girl. That was my pick.
Yep.
We got Black Panther 2.
Which we're just all picking.
The
all pick of the week.
And Marcus. That leaves you, my friend.
It does indeed.
It leaves one man standing.
Well, this week I'm picking Heavy Metal, number 280.
For what reason, though?
Well, this is the issue in which Grant Morrison takes over as the editor of Heavy Metal. Grant Morrison, which we're gonna get into Grant Morrison in just a little bit.
I hope so.
And we're gonna kind of point out why this is a big deal. But so Heavy Metal is a comics anthology, much like Island, but is rooted in the American comic history. It's been around since the 70s. Had kind of a heyday in the 70s and 80s, and is now under the curation of one Grant Morrison.
For a full year. So we lost Heavy Metal for a while.
We did.
We haven't seen a new issue of Heavy Metal in how long, Curtis?
6 months, you know. It's not
it's
too
long. It's
only
been 6 months?
Yeah.
I thought it was years for some reason.
No.
Okay.
It's been very sporadic.
Okay.
It's never gone away 100%, but it was monthly, and then 80s it went quarterly, and then it went sporadically.
Yeah.
So instead of breaking down every part of this anthology and which ones I liked and didn't like, I just wanted to talk a sec about like why I personally really dig comic anthologies. So Heavy Metal has some stuff in it that I liked and I didn't like. And I think it's important to read both those things.
I think that's that's cool in an anthology.
Yeah.
I think it's cool to have stuff that you like and don't like.
Yeah, because like you learn a little bit more about your taste and your preferences and what's happening with comics that maybe aren't your favorite. So there are some comics in this anthology that I probably wouldn't have read normally. Either the art isn't my style or the subject matter isn't there. But because it's in an anthology, I can read it or I can at least skim through it. And
dip your beak.
Yeah, and pull things from it. Like, this is a movement. So the first story in here is a comic by Grant Morrison as the writer and Benjamin Mara is the illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
Benjamin Mara... famed illustrator of Amwat, One Man War on Terror, which Curtis has talked about. So Amwat is not a book that I am particularly a fan of, but seeing his art under the writing of Grant Morrison, I was now able to see Benjamin Mara in kind of a new way.
Yeah.
I like his art in this book. It's kind of got a rad 80s rock van style to it.
Yeah,
it's real
He-Man.
Yeah, that I really dig. So that's the beauty of the anthology is instead of, you know, I can now experience Benjamin Mara in this new way and really dig part of it. It was just great. I really love that we are getting heavy metal curated by Grant Morrison. I think it's a match made in heaven.
There's something neat about like the coming off of the feeling of reading something that you liked and then going into something else that could be anything, or coming off something that you didn't like,
yeah,
and then how that affects the next thing that you read. A really well done anthology when it like takes you on that weird roller coaster,
yeah,
from story to story to story. Yeah, there's nothing else like it.
Absolutely.
When it works well.
What I would say in this, too, helped me realize I read two big old fat anthologies this week. And, like, we spend so much time picking exactly what our content is.
For
movies,
sure.
Music, whatever. You just pick the thing you want. It's, you don't just stumble into something that happens,
yeah,
you know, usually. Like Nick was saying, these anthologies, you know, it takes you on this weird roller coaster ride, different styles, different aesthetics. And it's pretty neat.
Yeah, and the whole thing comes together to make, like, to inform this one experience of the whole read,
yeah,
essentially, which is totally unique to a good anthology.
Well, and the cool thing about heavy metal, too, is, like, it's not just comics. Like, they do, Mimi Schultz is the artist for Artist Studio this issue.
Mm-hmm.
What
does that mean?
So they just give a sample of her work, full page spreads of it, so you can really kind of dive into it. And also,
and these are just, like, big pieces, big portraits.
Yeah, exactly.
Big, yeah.
And
then they
interview.
Do an interview. And the interview is really cool.
Yep.
Because Mimi Schultz's art is pretty unique.
What would you describe? How would you describe it?
I would describe it as purposeful voyeurism.
It's a little
voyeurism?
Sexy.
Is that what you
voyeurism,
want to say?
Thank you. So,
okay.
Thank you. It's sexy on purpose, but then the matter around the
a lot of
object
pop culture.
Of, yeah, is a lot of pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a Japanese influence for sure.
Absolutely.
She's a German-born artist.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just all these different kind of influences that I see when I was looking at coming into this thing.
Yeah.
Pop culture stuff, you know, like Victorian kind of era, fine art stuff.
Yeah.
It's a weird mash of a lot of things.
Yeah, and I like her art, but it was just cool to see the art and then get the interview and kind of see it through her eyes and how her creation. So she has a big thing about her creation process,
mm-hmm,
which I found to be fascinating, just from like an efficiency and lifestyle connection. And I like that about heavy metal. It has the comics, but it also does art. It does interviews. There can be articles inside of it that are a little bit more pop culture based. I read this thing cover to cover, and it took me a while. An easy 2 hours.
Yep.
And there was just some really, really beautiful stuff. So I will just quickly point out, like I said, Benjamin Mara and Greg Morrison.
Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison. Fuck!
No, let's call him Greg Morrison.
No,
I think
not.
His friends call him Greg.
That's not. No, I'm just... I will just point out real quick some of the highlights of this. So Grant Morrison has a beautiful little entry piece at the beginning, talking about kind of his philosophy about where he's going to steer this.
Can I say?
Yeah.
I found that essay a little thirsty. I was not a big fan of that.
Oh, I dug it.
Nick, don't take this the wrong way. I was reading it. I was like, there's a little Nick in here.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I was just feeling some Nick. I thought he was smart and funny. He would ramble and then pull a doodad.
Maybe it's my own self-hatred that I'm getting out of this.
I don't think
but,
so.
Yeah, I thought it was, he was trying to, he was a little thirsty for the funny.
Oh, I loved
I thought
it.
It was
I thought
cute.
It worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I enjoyed reading it. And then, yeah, obviously, Beachhead, which is written by Mr. Morrison and Benjamin Marr, I really dug. But the one that I really, really fell in love with, there's a small comic in here called Goddess by Ryan Ferrier, and the art is Hugo Petrus. Has kind of a print block, Scottish-Irish look to it. And
yeah.
Is about this village that takes too much from the land. And what does the land do to kind of say no more?
It's like a vegetarian manifesto.
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. Maybe. Yeah, for me, it was about overconsumption.
Yeah, these guys are eating very well. And the goddess of the forest has
can't
it takes
too
issue.
Well.
Yeah, well.
Don't
yeah.
eat too well.
I'm saying.
Yeah, really.
Did you guys recognize? I didn't recognize most of the names in this thing. I recognized Ben Mara and
yeah.
Brian Ferrier, like, or Ferrier rings a bell to me.
Yeah.
I didn't know any of the other names on that list.
So the Julia in Roem is Enki Bilal.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy is a very long time 2000 AD humanoids, heavy metal
okay.
contributor.
Okay.
Been around for like decades and decades. That's the only name I really noticed. He definitely has worked with like Yodorovsky and a couple of, you know, he's a dude.
Yeah.
Who's of massive renown. That's the only other name I recognized. I will say this story, Marcus, I think you liked it, The Key.
Yeah, I just opened
Massimiliano Frizzato.
That was my favorite one.
Oh, so really nice. Excellent.
6-page, quick little short story.
Yep.
Beautifully illustrated, wordless,
yep.
Fucking surreal.
Panel work was just dope.
Yeah.
3-in-1, 3 up top, 1 on the bottom.
Yep.
It was cool.
So I just finished it and started it right back over from the beginning. Yeah. Like, what did I just read?
Oh, well, that's I read it again, and then I was like, oh, I caught all the little details.
Yeah.
Because there's no words.
Right.
So you got to, like, look at the art really intensely, and it was great on the second read.
And for me, that's the beautiful thing about, like, heavy metal and this kind of anthology is just, like, I get exposed to so many artists and creators that, A, I've never heard of. It's a great way to launch someone's career and get them some recognition. Maybe they get picked up. So Grant Morrison got picked up, and the origin of his career is he did a story for 2000 AD. DC saw it and then gave him a chance.
Yeah.
And now he talks about in his essay at the beginning that he wants to pass that on. He wants to do that for other people. And so I love the fact that this book is mostly filled with new talent, at least for me, new talent for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Really enjoyable.
And Curtis, I think you nailed it. Like the idea of the... We read, especially if you're really into comics, it's all about your pull list. And it's about, like, crafting that pull list to the stuff that you really want to read. I mean, not for us, because we read a ton of shit.
Just roll around
but
in it.
But if you have to spend, you know, if you're spending money on this stuff, then you're just constantly trying to, like, cater for yourself what you think the perfect list is, because money is not infinite.
Correct.
And you can't read absolutely everything.
No.
But something, so you only end up reading the stuff that you already think that you're going to like.
Yep.
And it does kind of narrow, and that's, you know, we don't want to get on our high horse or anything, but that's a lot of media in general. You're able to just seek out the stuff that you want to watch. And this, an anthology like this, it opens up the scope a little bit in a way that's pretty cool. Never really thought about that way, but it's true.
It feels good to flex your eyeballs, broaden the beam.
Mm-hmm.
I got to say, throw it out real quick, this Salsa Invertebraxa.
You love this one.
The last story in this by somebody named Maz Chops.
Maz Chops.
Yeah, all caps. This is like, it was like a lyrical song. It was a poem.
It was definitely a poem, yeah.
About insects the life and death of insects in a giant rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was freaking awesome.
Yeah, I read it at like 2:00 in the morning, and it was a cool thing to read, kind of in like a sleepy, dreary, not all there state, because it's a beautiful poem all by itself.
It starts in the treetops, and then by the time you get to the end of this thing, it, like, you're getting down into, like, you know, you think about the floor of a rainforest that's so dense with, like, layers of rotting stuff, and by the end of this poem, you get all the way deep into the spider cave of the rainforest. It was freaking dope.
I didn't make it that far.
Oh,
I didn't check
really
that one
good.
Out.
And the art was a little digital, more digital than the rest of the series, I would say, and I liked it.
Yep.
It was cool that they explored that avenue. So, Heavy Metal 280. Grant Morrison's debut was really, really excellent.
Yeah, give it a try, man. It's so cool that...
give it a try.
We read a bunch of interviews with Grant Morrison to get ready for this and just listen to him talk about being approached for this.
Yeah.
And I love listening to Grant, and he does this with everything he does. Just so he wants to get in there. He's just reading tons of heavy metal. He's listing all the stuff he's reading to prepare himself mentally to be the editor of heavy metal.
Yeah.
And kind of boil it down to, why is it heavy metal? Why is it here? And then putting his spin on it. It's super rad.
I just love that, like, there are three kind of big name anthologies right now for comics. And that's The Island that Curtis did.
It's just called Island.
Highland, thank you. Heavy Metal and Dark Horse Presents.
Yep.
And all three of them. It's just so cool that there's that many anthologies out there for new artists to kind of dip their toes in and get their names out
there. And what's the DC one? Four Color... Something, Five Color. There's DC has an anthology.
Oh,
I'm blanking. You know what I'm talking about?
CMYX?
CMYK.
CMYK.
Yeah.
The color thing. That's about colors.
Yeah.
So
anthologies, everybody.
They're hard. And we waffle on anthologies because, you know, they're usually a lot of money and they're
a lot
of
tough
comics.
Sell.
And, you know.
Because we can't tell you, is this going to be good? And especially like serialized anthologies. We can go on and on. We have to move on.
We'll move on. That was Marcus's big pick. Heavy Metal 280.
Number 280.
Check it out. $8. It's a steal at $8.
I think you're right. I don't think you're wrong. Let's talk about Grant Morrison. Speaking of Grant Morrison.
Let's do it.
And we'll do a little bit of a little digestif of heavy metal at the end, a little history of the magazine.
Ooh.
What do you guys think?
Okay.
Who in the creeping hell is Grant Morrison?
Well, you guys know that I freaking love him.
Yeah, that
I'm super into
yeah,
Grant Morrison.
Yeah,
we
all know you love Grant Morrison.
What is he doing now? I'll read it. It's the best. Marcus, how do you feel? Tell us more.
I like a lot of his stuff. Getting into his history, I was doing some research on him last night, and kind of his comic origins and what he's been writing throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
It has done nothing but show that he is the man for the job.
Say what you want about him.
Say what you want about him. He is the man for the job. He is the dude who should be editing Heavy Metal magazine.
He just gives a shit. So if you like it or not, he's not disingenuous. It's you don't have to love his work, but the dude puts his heart.
You can't say that he's not
it.
Going all in on all of these books.
Yeah,
you can see the craftsmanship in all of it. So give me a little bit of his biography.
Yeah. So Grant Morrison grows up in Scotland. He's from the.
Don't ever do that again.
No Scotland like that.
No. Okay. One more time, please.
No, I'm good. Thank you. He grows up in Scotland and is kind of part of the punk rock scene. As a young man, he's in a band. What was his band name? I have it in here somewhere. But yeah, he's traveling with his band. And at the same time, he starts writing comics, little indie strips for this comic anthology called Starblazer. That was a British sci-fi anthology that was coming out monthly.
And he's like kind of a disaffected young man.
Yep.
He's kind of having a hard time. He's living with his mom and his sister, probably into a little bit older than he feels like he wants to be, like into his 20s. He's trying to figure out what he's doing with it, but he's always making comics and he's always reading comics.
Yeah, always making comics for sure. Like even while he's mid-tour,
mm-hmm.
there's photos like him in the tour group and he's sitting there illustrating and writing some comics
out.
He
spent a lot of time drawing back in those days,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So through his work of Starblazer, he gets noticed by 2000 AD, a comics British anthology that is still running to this day. And 2000 AD is pretty well known in the community. It's the home of Judge Dredd.
The comics community?
Yes. What?
No, go ahead.
What the fuck? What?
You just said the community. I was just making sure we were talking about the comics community.
I'm going to strangle myself with this cord.
Don't, please
no,
don't. You
please,
just
no,
have...
please tell us more about the comics community.
No, I choose to pass.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
You're kind of like a community organizer for the comics community.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Watch the fuck out. So he works for 2000 AD. 2000 AD is like the home of Judge Dredd.
Mm-hmm.
And he's putting out sci-fi stuff for their anthology. DC notices him, picks him up, and lets him. And he is, while he's doing the 2000 AD and the Starblazer stuff, he's sending stuff to DC and Marvel, and they're just rejecting it
mm-hmm.
left and right. He starts doing more stuff for 2000 AD. DC looks at him and says, all right, well, we want you to do Animal Man. And he goes and relaunches Animal Man for DC Comics. And really is lumped together with this late 80s, early 90s British invasion that's happening in comics.
Yeah, which we've talked about a bunch of times. Like, this is the thing that was happening in comics in the late 80s, that mid to late 80s, that forever changed the way comics
yeah.
were written.
And the bulk of it was happening under Karen Bargers.
Yeah, that was a little bit later.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, But yeah, totally.
At
so
Vertigo?
Late 80s and then early 90s at Vertigo.
Yeah.
Got it.
So this British invasion, it's Neil Gaiman doing Sandman, Peter Milligan doing Ecstatic, Jamie Delano, Hellblazer, and then Alan Moore, who's kind of seen as the father figure of this invasion with Swamp Thing.
Grant Morrison would very much take issue with that. I read a long article, this interview with... So it's Alan Moore gave this interview where he talks a bunch of shit about Grant Morrison.
Oh, I'm
right?
sure.
There's like this long-running feud between the two of them,
yeah.
which is kind of silly.
I've researched it thoroughly myself.
And Grant Morrison like annotated this whole interview. Have you read this, Curtis?
I have.
Where he just like refutes every single thing in much more detail than Alan Moore gives, like every reason why Alan Moore is wrong and
yep.
is a hack and is a liar.
Yep.
It's super fucking interesting.
Really?
So, and Grant Morrison's thing is that, like, you know, all of these folks were making comics for a long time before anybody knew who the fuck Alan Moore was.
Yeah.
True.
But Alan Moore kind of treats everyone like his descendants.
Yeah.
Especially, like, the big British wave comic writers.
Well, and there's a thing with Grant Morrison and Mark Miller. About like
oh, yeah.
mentorship and plagiarism and mm-hmm. stuff with that. And they started out as friends. Grant Morrison's quite a bit older than Mark Miller, 10 years older.
Yeah.
And really helped Mark Miller get his launch in the comic industry. And then there are rumors like, did Grant Morrison come in and finish the Ultimates run? and let Mark Miller publish it under his name.
That I have read that.
That's like a thing.
I have read that in a few places.
Yeah. I have never heard that.
Yeah, yep. So like Mark Miller starts the Ultimate. This is all, there's no fact.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison in an interview I read yesterday kind of hints towards it, but like Mark Miller starts the Ultimates. It gets very popular. He can't deal with the deadlines because he's not used to this kind of pressure. And Grant, he calls Grant Morrison. Grant Morrison comes in. They're buds.
I find that to be
finishes out.
I find that to be delicious.
Finishes
Nick,
out the Ultimate
Thread. His face right now, he's giddy.
Oh,
he's
my
just
God.
Eating this up.
And there's a ton of it about like how much did Grant Morrison give up for Mark Miller to get his launch
right.
in the comic industry.
Oh, how does that work?
So, Mark Miller's big launch for comics is, which one does he say? It's either the Ultimates or another run that they gave Miller early
in his career.
Before
he gets the Ultimates, it's a book, and then it's the Authority is his big one.
Yeah, I think it's the Authority that he's talking about with Mark Miller. And they offered it to Grant Morrison, and he was like, no. Like, Mark Miller's a cool dude. He's doing some anthologies with me at 2000.
Yeah.
Why don't you give it to him? And then they do it. And then Mark Miller, to like get his own image in the comic world, starts shitting on Grant Morrison to like be that rebel. Grant Morrison's like, all right, well, F you. Like, and they're done. They're no longer friends.
What's the thing? It's the petulant child.
Yeah.
You know?
I just figured Grant Morrison read Wanted and just washed his hands of the whole thing.
But yeah, there's a huge thing about it. All right, so either way.
I still like Wanted, for the record, even though I laughed there.
Grant Morrison and many people have few. But yeah, so he's part of the big British invasion. Mark Miller comes, like I said, 10 years down the road, but is still from Scotland as well. So, you know, there is a little bit of a connection there with their thing. But he does Animal Man and then really gets his big U.S. launch with Doom Patrol. And that's where people really start to pick up on him. Doom Patrol, go ahead, Nick.
I just was hoping Curtis could give us a full synopsis, a comprehensive synopsis of Doom Patrol.
I would love that.
Oh, absolutely not. I cannot give you a full synopsis.
No, nobody
of that.
Can.
Yeah. It's just wild. It's almost stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
It's dark. It's layered. It's the shit. Like everything he does.
But isn't it? It's kind of about misfits. Is that true? Would you say that?
I mean, it's sort of
it's kind of the theme, maybe.
Yeah, it's about a scientist who's sort of like a Frankenstein character. He creates a robot that's then becomes a human, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's complicated. People die. You know, it's intense. There's definitely psychedelic as hell.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, Grant Morrison's that dude. In my mind, when I think of Grant Morrison's superheroes, there's this psychedelia there that he does like nobody else.
Yeah,
and it's just wild. You know, The Invisibles is a great example of
that. Yeah, the dude goes on to just write a ton of comics. But Nick, the thing that I think all of us find really interesting, the thing you kind of dived into, was Grant Morrison has some interesting characteristics about him.
He's an interesting dude.
Yeah, will you break down kind of some of the research you did?
I love his writing, and I love his, you know, I love his whole body of work. If I see Grant Morrison's name in a book, I'm going to get that book. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to read it more closely than I would most other stuff. He's totally earned it. That being said, he's kind of a weirdo, and he says some things sometimes that make me wonder if he is on a different plane of existence than the rest of us, or if he's just an asshole. Or if he's a genius, like I'm all over the map with this dude, and in equal measure. And sometimes he seems like very just eloquent and cogent, and like, and there's nobody else like him. And then sometimes I'm like, are you just fucking with everybody? And then sometimes I'm like, are you a moron? I honestly can't tell.
Yeah.
So all that being said, he's a practicing chaos magician.
Of course he is.
I learned a lot about chaos magic. I converted to chaos magic this morning.
But what is chaos? I don't know. You got to break it down for me.
So the idea is chaos magic is that belief is a tool that you can use to affect change and create new things. I can just change my belief. That's the core principle of chaos magic as I understand it. I'm sure that a chaos magician would tell me that I'm full of shit, but that is my understanding of it.
I'm a huge fan. That's the switch.
That's the switch.
Just flip the switch
at
any moment.
But it's not just about keeping an open mind. It's about I'm going to fully subsume this completely contradictory belief at this very moment and make it completely my own belief system.
Nice.
So that's the magic part of it, because
it's totally real.
Belief is supposed to be like this intrinsic part of who you are. Whatever.
You just converted me.
Yeah.
Just like that. Bang.
I'm apostatizing
flipping the switch
for chaos magic.
Cool.
And now I'm whatever. I'm something else. Now I'm a lemur. So you can choose to use it as a tool, belief. rather than as like an unchanging part of who you are. And the big thing about chaos magic, I could go on and on about chaos magic, you guys, but I won't. But it's you. If you there's a process. It's called magical paradigm shifting, where you take two different contradictory beliefs, and you follow the rituals of those two contradictory beliefs. So the example that I read was like a Lovecraftian thing, and a very kind of like a more like straight-laced or cogent belief system. I can't remember who invented it. But you do these two contradictory rituals at the same time.
Yeah.
And by doing them simultaneously and together, and by owning both of those beliefs together, you can see through all social conditioning to the central nature of reality.
I fucking love what you're saying right now.
And it's pretty loose because you can be chaos magicians can basically do whatever
they
want. It's chaos. Everybody practices it in their own way. You can do it in whatever way that suits you. And it's not necessarily a given that it has to do with drugs. Like, that's how some people, and that's how Grant Morrison, like, frequently talks about it, like, with psychedelic drugs, taking acid and stuff.
Right.
But that's not, like, intrinsic to chaos magic.
I love it.
I love it.
Anyway.
The dude's also, like, you know, claimed to be abducted by aliens.
Yeah, in 1994, he was abducted by aliens, which he contacted using chaos magic.
Of course. Yeah.
Which was William S. Burroughs, or early chaos magician.
Nice.
By the way.
Oh, that makes sense.
And The Invisibles is his recounting and reaction to being abducted by aliens in 1994.
Oh, most certainly.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, like, you know, him and Alan Moore, not to clump them in the same group and get yelled at, but, you know...
Well, Alan Moore is also a magician.
He also and has these weird encounters with aliens, and, like, he claims that he's met John Constantine after he wrote him in a museum.
According to Grant Morrison, Alan Moore is totally biting his magic style.
Really?
Yeah, he totally is, though.
See,
sorry,
now you guys
Alan
are
riffing.
I call him a has-been once, and we get fucking hate
Well,
mail.
Look, I'm not saying he's a has-been.
I did not call him a has-been. I think that's worse than everything we've been saying, to call him a has-been.
So, can we go back to the feud? You guys know initially that Grant Morrison was tapped to write Miracle Man?
Oh, no.
And he wrote a really nice letter. This is the beginning of the feud to Alan Moore.
Oh, yeah, right.
And he said, oh, hey, Alan Moore, hey, I'm going to write this book, but, man, I'm really nervous. You know, I want to follow you up, and I want to do a great job and all this stuff. And Alan Moore wrote him back that, like, if you do this... You know, potentially horrible, you know, like a mob style, like, you know, not thinly veiled threat, like, don't fucking do this.
Really?
Yeah. And that's the beginning of the kerfuffle between the two. So, anywho, Alan Moore, I love you, man, but Grant Morrison, stop biting his chaos magic. Okay?
They've been throwing fireballs at each other for
get
so
off
long.
I want to watch that.
So that we could go on and on about Grant Morrison. He's got this very long career. He's been writing comics for a very, very long time. He's written some of my favorite comics, some of your favorite comics. And I think it's really cool to have him on Heavy Metal Magazine. I think, like you said, Marcus, it's the perfect home for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we get like a really quick little tasty breakdown of what Heavy Metal Magazine is?
Sure. Heavy Metal Magazine originally gets converted. There's a French magazine. Curtis, please say it with your beautiful accent.
Metal Hurlant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And wow. That was really nice. So
Metal Hurlant.
I have goosebumps.
I know. The publisher of National Lampoon magazine, Leonard Mogel, is in Paris trying to launch the European National Lampoon, comes upon this French comic anthology, comes to the United States, and creates Heavy Metal magazine in the 70s, and starts reprinting this French magazine, just translated.
Howling Metal is the translation
of
what it was in original in French.
Yeah.
Howling Metal.
That's fucking great.
That's awesome. Fucking great.
It has its heyday from the 70s to the 80s. Currently, Kevin Eastman, creator of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, he owned Heavy Metal for a while now. He recently sold it in 2014. But he is the publisher of Heavy Metal Magazine.
And was the EIC editor-in-chief.
Correct, for a while. And is still like really involved. Kevin Eastman really is invested in Heavy Metal. And he sums up...
Kevin Eastman seems like a cool dude.
I think he is, yeah. He sums up my thoughts on Heavy Metal pretty well, because I'm not as into the comics with an X as Curtis. And he says, Heavy Metal wasn't as harsh or extreme as some underground comics, but definitely intended for an older readership.
So I was allowed to read any comics when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Curtis, you know this.
I do know
this. I just, with impunity, I just...
It was ridiculous,
Somebody should have stopped me.
Yep.
You should have stopped me.
I was a total enabler. I was like, here, take all this filth.
But the one thing I was not allowed to read was Heavy Metal.
Really?
That was the one thing that my mom was like, because she knew about that one. Yeah. That like had it's still, you know, it had connotations from back in the day or whatever. That was the one book's like, nope, no heavy metal.
Yeah, it's often referred to as kind of like, someone quoted it as the Playboy for nerds. And there is like, there's some nudity drawings in it.
Was there a time when it had kind of like a vein of erotica? Kind of running through
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that, for many
is that
years.
For is that was that always a thing, or was that just a thing in like the kind of the late 80s,
so
early 90s?
So I've popped in and out over the years, but Richard Corbin had a story called I'm blanking on the name, but it was about this huge muscular alien guy, and there was just penises and boobs all over this thing, and it wasn't like, you know, full on sex, very sexy, lots of boobs and dicks.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, that was my memory of heavy metal as a kid, teenager,
right,
peeping in.
That's always what I assumed. Yep. That's always what I associated with it for a long time.
It's just, you know, yeah.
Dens was the name. I just popped into my head. Richard Corbin, this really great artist. And he, yeah, this huge muscular dude.
Yeah.
With just a schlong hanging out every issue.
Yeah. So this is a new direction.
That's what I remember.
Yeah. I think
this new heavy metal.
I think we're gonna see little tads of that in it.
Tads?
I hope so.
Little drops.
Okay.
Of it.
Little whiffs of boners and boobs.
I mean, there's definitely.
Is that okay? Can I say that?
What is a whiff? What is a whiff of
just
a boner?
Just a tad
like
of a boner.
A skosh of a penis.
Yeah.
Here or there.
You know, Grant Morrison's not scared to. He's not going to shy away from
he
that
is
kind
not
of stuff
scared of cocks.
If he thinks
no,
that
that's
would be good.
What you were getting at.
But yeah, Heavy Metal Magazine. Definitely coming back. And you said you read that Grant Morrison's only going to be doing it for a year.
1 year is what I read.
Well, hopefully they can convince him to stay on for longer.
Wonderful. So that's Greg Morrison and Heavy Metal Magazine. Let's...
Howling Metal Magazine.
Howling... I think
way
that's
better
so
name.
Good.
Yeah.
That screams.
Howling Metal. That's dope. Can we get a board game review up in here, please?
I think I'm ready.
Marcus, you played a board game called Patchwork.
I did. In my quest to find really good two-player games,
yeah,
I found Patchwork.
You know, there's like a lot of two-player games
there
out there.
There are.
A lot of good ones.
I'm a huge fan of them.
Okay.
And I'm glad to see that,
you can't
we're, getting,
get enough.
That we're getting more of them. It's a good thing to have. And Patchwork, put up by Mayfair Games, who created published Catan for a long time, is what they're mostly known for. And I was instantly drawn to this game. Because it is quilt themed.
You love quilts,
I
guess.
I do love quilts. And
that's
a
weird thing to just lay out there.
Well, I come from a family of quilt makers. It's a two-player quilt game. It was Destiny.
You come from a family of quilt makers?
I do.
So how does Betsy Ross factor into this whole situation?
She doesn't.
I know you love America is all I'm getting at, and quilts.
I do. You're not wrong.
Okay.
So in Patchwork is a game where you are trying to collect tiles and to place them in such a way that you complete your quilt square.
Nice.
Yeah, it's awesome. And it is a competitive game. It is a mix of Tetris and a little bit of resource management, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Very fun game.
Each player is constructing their own quilt.
Their own quilt patch, yes.
I see.
Is all part of the same quilt?
The quilts of life, maybe. But
But not
No.
Your quilts don't interact. Your quilts don't touch. That would be gross.
Yeah, don't touch my quilt with your quilt.
And these little pieces have buttons on them. And buttons are your resource, and you collect all of the buttons on your quilt at certain points to kind of bank up. It is a very, very fun two-player game, and I love that it's not Pharaoh, medieval, or samurai themed. It's a theme that I've never seen before in a board game.
Right.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Patchwork is just... It's a blast. It's a quick little two-player game. It's, you know, 30 minutes maybe from the time you open the rule book to when you're in the middle of it.
You're saying this quilt game is a blast.
I think it's a blast.
It's a thrill ride.
Like there's some intense moments. The Tetris element of
some
it.
Intense moments.
There are. The Tetris element of it, you're trying to link these pieces together to not have any gaps in your quilt.
Oh. Lose points for gaps.
Exactly. Because it's not a well-made quilt square.
Absolutely, it's
so
not.
So there are moments where you'll like
your
lay a
piece.
Your
little toes will peek through it in the night.
That's a huge bummer.
That's a huge bummer.
Yeah. And you'll lay a piece and then like maybe two turns down the path, you're like, oh, shit. Like that is not the ideal place for that piece of quilt.
Yeah.
But overall, like, the game itself is great.
How do you compete with each other? So is it you're there's competing a scoring for resources, system,
resources?
Or you're just trying to build the sweeter quilt more efficiently?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. So as you play, your choices for quilt squares changes. You can only choose X amount out of the pool.
Yeah.
And there's a way to dictate which of the ones you are allowed to choose from. So you want to try to get pieces. You also are looking to see, can I take pieces that maybe they need later on down the road via their quilt square?
Yeah.
And you need buttons. Because button is the resource of the game.
Do quilts have buttons?
That was my next question. I feel like that would be uncomfortable when you're like,
yeah,
you know,
that would chafe against my tent because I go full nude when I have a quilt.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Not under any blanket necessarily, but if I see a quilt, the clothes are coming off.
Buck naked.
So I'm gonna snag
instantly.
On something, Marcus.
No, well, the buttons are on the top of the quilt.
I get all mixed.
There's a top. There's
all
a top
up.
Of the quilt.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a top and a bottom to,
I did not
to the
know
quilt.
That. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you're not
you
making
over.
A quilt, when you're not actually quilting,
yeah.
play patchwork.
Yeah.
You think Grant Morrison cares which side of the quilt is the top of the quilt? My timer's done.
Fucking
what is happening today?
Yeah. I don't think Grant absolutely. Morrison does care. I have a hard time selling this game because people are kind of, the theme isn't rather exciting.
Well, let me tell you this. I trust you as a board game player slash reviewer.
Yeah.
But looking at the box, I'm like, oh yeah, I don't need a quilt game.
Really?
Yeah, the theme does absolutely nothing for
no,
me.
No, I'm talking shit, but I am up, like you said, I'm up for any game that does anything with a theme that's not what we've seen a thousand times. Mm-hmm. So I'm open to it.
Yeah.
Again, quilts are not like the first thing that I'm gonna
now we're
for,
kind of, now we're kind of getting into a crafting theme though. So like Patchwork came out, and now Knitwit is yeah. a hot game. All
what
about
the hell?
Knitting.
Knitwit is another quilt game.
Well, it's about knitting, not quilting.
Oh, Knitwit.
Knitting yeah. is not quilting, you idiot! You idiot!
It's just like crocheting.
Get your American
same
pastimes
thing.
Right. No. So yeah, Patchwork. If you're looking for a two-player game, it's a very fun. Fast two-player game
yeah.
With have a you, very unique theme.
Have you played Crochet Guevara?
I have not.
We'll have to review that next time.
I want a game that's like got those mallards well, that have aprons and bonnets.
Yeah.
And that could be the theme. Would that be like Country Time Kitchen?
What is it that you're referencing
the game?
Right now? I don't even know what
I do.
Is
I know exactly what you're talking about.
The
but
Cracker
hey,
Barrel?
The the next game we are going to review is a game called Duck Duck Moose Moose.
Cool.
Oh, do these ducks have
it's
bonnets?
It's not duck,
or?
Duck, moose, moose. It's what? Rabbit, rabbit, moose, moose.
Rabbit, rabbit,
or bunny,
moose,
bunny, moose, moose.
Bunny, bunny, moose, moose.
Bunny, bunny, moose, moose.
Thank you.
What's the name of the game? Cow, cow, monkey, monkey?
No, it's what is, it's
I have to shut all of you up so that we can move on.
Bunny, bunny, moose, moose, and we're going to review it very soon.
Okay. That was Patchwork.
That was Patchwork. Thank you for the board game review, Marcus.
I'm here for you.
Now what? Now what do we talk about?
Just gotta get my mind right
and
thinking about quilts
and croqueting.
I got quilts on my mind.
I don't blame you.
So Free Comic Book Day was last Saturday.
That shit happened.
I feel like we've crawled out the other side of a womb.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm born again.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I've been baptized in the fire water of Free Comic Book Day, as I am every year.
Yeah.
And I have emerged a god.
That's I was trying to figure out what happened Saturday night when I was covered in like kind of slime and blood.
Yeah.
But I was being born.
That's what
again.
That was. You were crawling out of a canal.
I got it.
Of a person.
That's what happened.
Gross. So, yeah, it was great. It was a fun day. We had a whole bunch of people get free comic books.
Uh-huh.
Thousands and thousands of people. It happened all over the world. But most importantly, it happened at our three comic shops, which was really crazy and weird.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful. I had a great time.
Did you see my funny note that I wrote here?
Free comic book day planning begins the first Sunday in May.
Oh, you see what I did there?
Because it's the day after.
It's like funny
because
it's
day.
Like the first Saturday in May is free comic book day, and that shit takes a lot of the logistics and what with the thinking and talking about it.
So yeah.
So yeah, we started planning the next one right after we washed all that blood and
right after we
filth off.
Right after we hosed off. So thank you, everybody, for coming out.
It was an awesome day.
It was a blast.
Yeah, it was really good.
The amount of costumes, the amount of little kids.
Yeah.
I got a soft spot for little kids. There was a little kid dressed as a TIE fighter.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing
Whoa, that's cool.
So dig this. He's wearing a Darth Vader helmet.
Uh-huh.
Both his arms are the TIE fighter wings, and like his stomach is like
the center
of the
yeah.
TIE fighter. And my man's like flying around with his arms and shit.
Oh, man, that's something
it
I didn't even think about, that now that these new Star Wars movies are out, kids are going to give a shit about... like TIE Fighters and X-Wings again.
Yeah.
Because those prequels didn't have none of that shit.
Nope.
So, like, little kids think TIE Fighters are cool again.
Yeah.
I tried to show my little brother, a TIE fighter once, and he was like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what the fuck that is.
But did you notice nobody's dressing like a Naboo stealth fighter, though? Because they suck.
Or like a speeder bike.
Yeah.
Anyway. We're going off on a serious tangent. Vault Midnight Detroit's been open for 9 days.
Yep.
And I literally thought we had been open for a month.
Yeah, when you talked to me, you were like, man, I feel like we've been open for 6 years.
It's so, and we've been open for 9 days.
Yeah. No, it feels like this is a weird open. So we haven't done a lot of these. We talk like, man, we just opened so many comic shops. It's only three.
Yeah.
This is the third one.
Yeah.
This one popped out like pretty fully formed, more so than the last one.
It did. Yeah.
You know? So it's kind of weird because you just go there and it's like, it's a comic shop.
If it feels like we missed something.
But we didn't, though.
I don't think we missed it.
I feel like it's all there. But it's weird that it's just bang, it's there.
And it's been going really well. People have been visiting us and hanging out with us at the shop and scoping it out. It's been really cool. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Detroit. We're just getting going, though. Let's do it for 9 more days. What do you think?
Let's keep it rolling for at least 9 more days.
Excellent. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
As we do every week.
Mr. Volkoff, I appreciate you having me.
Our producer and editor is Rachel Polk. Our music was created by Abom. All of our art and design was created by Philip Wong. Special thanks to the Ann Arbor District Library for the use of their recording studio.
If you could, please subscribe and download and review the Super Skull Show on iTunes.
We have a website. We have a Twitter. Super Skull Show is how you find us. Please check us out on the internet.
Super Skull is brought to you by Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff and podcasts since 1996. My name is Nick Weibar.
I'm Marcus Schwimmer.
And I'm Captain Kirkus Sullivan.
And Wabba Labba Ding Dong. I would want a better outgoing message. You guys got one?
And Wabba Labba Ding Dong.
That's not it, but I feel you.
Okay.
What
until
is
next
it?
Week. Wabba Labba Ding Dong until next week.
I got nothing. Whatever birth canal you crawl out of,
I hope Jesus, no.
There is a shower nearby.
Get off the mics. You're banned.
That song's about the Great Depression. Do you know that, the chicken dance?
Is it really?
No, not really.
I was like, I feel like it's way older than the Great Depression.
It's like people would kill for a chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
And
the dance was just like the death wrangling of your body when you couldn't eat.
It was like a rain dance, if you will. It was like the modern American equivalent for chicken. Please, poultry gods.
It was a death rattle.